Welcome to another edition of the True North Country Comics podcast, dedicated to promote Canadian comic book creators and supporters. I'm John Swinimer. On this episode, I chat with Scott Marshall. Scott is a writer, artist, and designer who lives in beautiful Halifax, Nova Scotia. When he's not a technical writer by day, he pursues a variety of creative projects the rest of the time. His comic books include Young, Dumb, and Full of Comics, along with The Insult. During our chat, Scott talked about his influences, buying comic books as a youngster, the influence of Buddhism on his creative work, and a hint about his upcoming work that he's planning for the Dartmouth Comic Arts Festival. Before we go further, I encourage you to like his podcast on iTunes and hopefully leave a good rating. Please check out the TrueNorthCountryComics.com website. Like us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram so you can discover a lot more information about Canadian comic book creators and supporters. And now, here's my chat with Scott Marshall.
I consider myself a native Nova Scotian. My entire family is from Digby, which is a small town. And I worked at, I guess it's on the northwest shore.
Yeah, anyway. Known for clams. Good Digby clams, I hear.
Scallops.
Scallops. There you go. Sure, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They see the world. They see scallops. I was actually born in British Columbia. My parents had me very young. It was the practice back then, born in 1968, so I'm very nearly 50 years old. The practice back then was if you were having a child out of wedlock, you would leave town and then just kind of mysteriously come back with a baby.
Clark Kent style, yeah.
Yeah, so one set of my grandparents were working out in BC at the time, so they went and stayed with them. I think they would have stayed there to work, but my father wound up getting a job with an accounting firm back in Digby. They transferred him to Woodstock, New Brunswick when I was 3.
So you were in Woodstock, New Brunswick?
Yep. That's basically where I grew up.
Huh.
And then I came back to Nova Scotia for college. I went to Acadia for 6 years. Got married to my first wife. We went to Ontario for a few years, then back to New Brunswick. Moved to St. John, where I lived for 20 years. So that's, you know, right across the Bay of Fundy from Digby, basically. She and I have a son named Jack, who is named after Jack Kirby.
Now, that's kind of interesting how you get, I mean, if I were to say to my wife, I want to name my son Luke Skywalker, I don't think that would fly. So you must have a very understanding wife.
Well, she's not my wife anymore, but yes, we both like the name.
Sure.
It just had the extra special meaning to me. And it's funny, actually, at the time, you know, he was born in 2002, so he gets into preschool and stuff, and there's all these other kids named Jack. Jack has become like a really popular name.
There you go. Yeah, my dad's name is Jack, yeah.
Was it? Yeah, and yeah. I don't know why suddenly it's just one of those names that comes back in fashion, I guess. But
there you go. Was Jack Kirby a big influence for you?
Yeah, pretty huge. Kirby, Harvey Kurtzman, Gil Kane, a lot of the kind of golden silver age guys. Unfortunately, they were mostly guys. These days, thankfully, there's a lot more great women artists to enjoy as well. But when I was a kid, yeah, it was in the 70s, Kirby and reprints of Kurtzman, Elder, Mad comics and just all kinds of crazy stuff.
So here's a question for you. I grew up in the Yarmouth area, and I would go to my general store with the spinner rack and find books. I'm wondering, how did you find your comic books growing up?
It was a weird time, the 70s, for comics. I don't know how old you are. But
I'm just slightly older than you, yeah.
Oh, really? Okay, so you remember.
Oh, yeah.
The distribution was very different, of course. There wasn't really much in the way of comic shop back then, apart from, I think, you know, Wilkie's probably had a place here in Halifax for a while, and Odyssey 2000, whatever else. But when I was a little kid, my parents, I first got into comics because we would take these long car rides from Woodstock to Digby. So they would shut me up by throwing Archie comics at me or whatever. When I started to really kind of seek them out on my own, they used to be these stores called United Bookstores. You would trade in your old books and comics, and they would give you these credit check things. They had like a little check imprinting machine in every store, and they would figure out the amount and slam the lever down and hand you this little credit note for however much. So I would buy old comics there sometimes. I would find them like in my local library in Woodstock. And there was a soda shop I remember in downtown Woodstock where I used to go when I was like 12 years old and in my early teens. I became an obsessive collector of the Micronauts comic book.
Oh, right, yeah.
I was haunting the soda shop looking for that. And I finally actually wound up subscribing to it. using Marvel's kind of standard subscription program. And that is what indirectly got me into making comics. What happened was I was like this super fan of the Micronauts. I wrote a letter to them late in the run. I think it was somewhere around issue number 42, and the letter got published.
Wow.
Yeah. And back then, they used to also put your address in the... It was very common for fans to reach out to each other through letter columns. So I was recruited by an amateur press association, or APA for short, when I was about 14 years old. And I had no idea what they were. The deal was, but for those who don't know, because these are long gone, basically, amateur press associations were basically clubs where everyone in the club created a zine, and they would send it in to one person who ran the administrative part of it. In the APA that I was in, they were called the central mailer. You'd send them in all your stuff. They would collate one copy of everyone's zine for everyone, staple it together, and send it back out. So it was kind of like this big homemade magazine that would come out every month or every 2 months, depending on the schedule. And so there were APAs devoted to basically any kind of fandom you could think of. One of the longest running ones, it's probably still going, is called X-APA for the X-Men comics.
And this is out of the United States or out of Canada?
Oh, worldwide.
Oh, wow. Cool.
A lot of them were centered in the States because a lot of them were, you know, kind of proto versions of the fandoms that we have now for various films and so on. Probably my favorite one, there used to be a directory of all the apps called the New Moon Directory. Probably my favorite one was devoted to fans of Frank Zappa, and it was called Frank's Appa.
That's cool.
Yeah. But anyway, I got recruited by one Appa that was devoted to, some of them were kind of themed. So the one I was recruited to was about super teams, and they didn't really have any Micronauts fans, so they were like, hey, do you want to join? I was like, no, I don't know what you're talking about. But they sent me like some samples of what people did. And about a year later, I think, I saw there used to be a magazine called Comic Scene, which was a spinoff of Starlog magazine.
Oh, okay, yes.
And I remember picking up a back issue that was all about Kirby and the legal struggles that he had had with Marvel. I really didn't know anything about that until then. In fact, that was probably my first inkling, apart from the muttering that you heard about Siegel and Shuster with the Superman movie.
Right.
The story about Kirby was probably my first inkling that maybe people hadn't been treated all that great in comics. So that was interesting. And then in that same, either that issue or a different issue, they had a big article about APAs and what they were and how they worked. I wound up writing to one of the ones in that article called APA Centauri. It was a kind of a, it had started out as a comics APA and then became more of a general interest thing. And, but there, it had a kind of a strong comics leaning to it. I met some people there, and as I graduated high school and went into college, I'd always been very comfortable as a writer. But not very comfortable as an artist, and I kind of through the encouragement of making those zines and seeing other people who had gone to art school and seeing kind of their how their practices were going, it encouraged me to start drawing finally when I was about 20.
Oh, okay. Good. Good.
And a lot of my early stuff went into that APA. I became like a huge contributor to that app, over 2,000 pages of material.
Oh my goodness.
Over I think nearly 20 years I was in that thing.
There you go. I was reading on your site that you're a technical writer by day and you pursue creative writer projects at night. And I'm wondering, I mean, technical writing is a very specific type of writing. I'm wondering if it has been any sort of inspiration for you in creating any of your creative projects.
Probably not in a real obvious way, but certainly in other ways, because technical writing, you have to be, you know, sort of really well organized and a bit of a self-starter. It's not quite as much of a sausage grinder as journalism is. I have a number of friends who are either in or around journalism, and when you're a journalist, you know, you get up, you know you're going to have to write 500 words, and you do it. You bang it out, and you don't worry. you know, you make it as good as you can in the time that you have, and that's it. And I think there's certainly a value to that mindset, but generally it would be delusional for me to say that I'm anything but a pretty slow and deliberate worker when it comes to art, and I can't quite be that slow and deliberate when it comes to tech writing.
Right, right. Okay.
There's some overlap, but not a huge amount for me.
Got it. You also mentioned that your wife, Nicole, completed a PhD in medieval lit. I presume I studied literature in university, and with that it usually comes with a ton of books. Presume that there's a lot around your house. I'm wondering if they've inspired you to do any of your own creative works.
Oh, yeah, for sure. My book collection is not nearly as big as it used to be. All the remarrying and moving house and all kinds of things over the years have impacted that. So it's kind of distilled down kind of to stuff that would be hard to replace or that, you know, was just kind of a deal I couldn't refuse kind of thing.
Right, right.
But yeah, but between my wife and I, we've got basically a wall of books. And hers are a lot of her academic books, and mine, there's basically a big shelf of comic hardcovers and trade paperbacks, and then another shelf of various authors that I like, and Archie Comics Digest. And
do you refer to them on a regular basis every now and then? Do you pull them out and say, yeah, that's
like
kind of
for reference?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Occasionally. There are times when I'll decide, well, I want to do something more in this kind of visual style. So I'll study up on like Alex Toth or somebody like that, where I'm trying to figure out how they did what they did a little bit. I actually just picked up, speaking of things I couldn't refuse, I was looking around Amazon, and of course I've ordered things through them before. So they're like, hey, have you checked out this new book by Kirby? There's a new one of those big fancy art books of The Prisoner.
Oh,
that,
right.
That Kirby and Gil Kane did, and they had a pretty deep discount on it, so I ordered that, and I've been poring over that the last week.
Well, it's definitely inspirational. We saw some of that work spill over into the Thor Ragnarok as designs in the background, and that people picked up on that quite a bit, so that was pretty interesting. That's cool. You also mentioned that you're a Buddhist, and I'm wondering if any of that lends itself to a sort of a Zen method of making comic books.
I wish. Well, yes and no.
Okay.
My Buddhism is my Instagram handle is The Worst Buddhist, which is kind of true and kind of isn't. I'm definitely not the worst Buddhist. I'm probably not anyone's typical idea of a Buddhist either, where, you know, everyone's just kind of blissed out and peaceful all the time. My Buddhism is more of, it helps me keep things in perspective and try not to stress about things that that can't be helped.
Right.
So and Buddhism really, for all of the flavors that there are of it around the world, it really is just about dealing with reality. Mm-hmm. And so in that sense, if I can deal with reality, that's bound to have a positive impact on my art.
Sure.
Now, having said that, there are definitely comics that I've done where, you know, I'll put a little reference to Buddhism that maybe only I would understand. I have a lot of private jokes in my stuff because no one's going to read them but me for the most part. And I have been thinking about doing a longer piece, not a graphic novel exactly, but just a longer piece about my take on Buddhism, since I've been at it for I think like 20 years now, and was interested in it before that.
Right.
You know, I think I could probably do a pretty decent explainer to people who are curious about it, or who kind of only see one fraction of it because it's, you know, whatever Oprah's promoting at the time.
Right, right.
There's probably a lot of curiosity about it right now. I was actually just reading the new issue of The Coast. I don't know if you are aware of this, but the lineage holder of Shambhala Buddhism, which is based here in Halifax, has been accused of sexual misconduct.
Oh my. Uh-oh.
So as you may know, the Shambhala community is, you know, this is their international center, and I'm sure I'm sure they're going through some stuff right now.
You've certainly written some great books. Young, Dumb, Full of Comics, and The Insult, I think, are your ones that you have listed on your site.
Yeah.
Could you describe those for people who are not familiar with your work? Maybe a quick summary of those.
Well, I've always been kind of, just by default, I've always been kind of a short fiction writer. So most of my comics are no more than, you know, 4 to 8 pages, if that. And so they tended to be released just kind of as mini comics over the years. Mm-hmm. I might, you know, in a typical year, I might release 1 or 2 mini comics, if that. And then I might also do some web comics here and there, just whatever I feel like doing, basically. A couple of years ago, after my wife and I, you know, she was finishing up her PhD, but didn't really need to be in residence anymore at Queen's. We were living in Kingston, Ontario at the time. Mm-hmm. We decided to move back to the Maritimes to be closer to family. And we knew that she was going to have an academic job search coming up. And so I suggested, well, why don't we go to Halifax? There's like a million universities there, and, you know, we both like it. And
sure.
So that's where we decided to settle for a while. When we moved here, it kind of felt like a fresh start to me, in the sense that I hadn't actually lived in Nova Scotia for a long time, but I do consider it to be home. So I knew, you know, well, now I'll be able to do DCAF every year. It's a favorite show of mine. I should really make more of an effort to kind of let people know that I exist, for one thing. So I decided to try and compile together a decent collection of kind of everything I had done up to that point. I realized that I had been making comics on and off for over 25 years at that point.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. A lot of the people who had gone into cartooning, or, you know, who were kind of my, quote, class of indie cartoonists in the 90s, you know, many of them had, you know, gone into something else.
right.
And there are definitely still some great ones who are working away at comics, but not nearly as many as there once was.
Sure.
So anyway, I put together this book, Young, Dumb, and Full of Comics, as a kind of themed collection of most of what I had done up till that point: mini comics, web comics, mm-hmm. just weird stuff, some stuff from the Amateur Press Association, I think, and that came together to be a pretty decent compilation of all that stuff. And then The Insult is just a collection of a webcomic that I was doing in 2016. It was just this weird idea I had where I thought, oh, this would be a good way for me to regularly get some comics out into the world without having to do much work.
Because right.
It's just the artwork from the old Charles Atlas ads.
Yes, I noticed that. Yeah, it's quite familiar. Yeah.
Yeah. And I would rewrite the script around a different subject every time. So mm-hmm. Mac, the guy who gets the sand kicked in his face, he gets mad about it, and he resolves to become something else in every incarnation of the strip. So there's one where he becomes a boy wizard, for example. It's full of Harry Potter jokes.
Ah.
So it's basically, you know, it was my attempt to do something like Ryan North's Dinosaur Comics, where
yes,
the artwork
exactly.
is always essentially the same, but mm-hmm. it's a writing exercise and a bit of an improv exercise as well.
Cool, that's good.
Yeah.
And what is your current work that you have on the go?
I am actually trying to get something done for DCAF again,
which
is in 2 weeks. I'm working on a couple of things. There's a mini comic, which is an adaptation of an old song, which is something I've done many times for whatever reason. I'm fascinated with the interplay between comics and music.
Hmm.
So the one I'm adapting now is just this old kind of American standard Western song called Oh Bury Me Not. The version in my head is always the one from Johnny Cash, and one of his American recordings albums. It goes, Oh Bury Me Not on the Lone Prairie, that one.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
So I'm about halfway through finishing the artwork for that. It's just this little 8-page mini comic.
Cool.
And then I'm also doing, I'm hoping to have another mini comic done by then, which is probably just going to be a collection of some 1 or 2 page short comics. I've been just the last couple of weeks, I had this weird idea for comics that are from the point of view of a character in a long-running action series on TV, NCIS. It's kind of these weird fan fiction comics about NCIS.
Oh, okay. Well, it's got a big big audience, that's for sure.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what they'll think of that. But it's been fun to do. And
sure.
Because they're all like 1 and 2 pages, I've been able to do kind of experiments, I guess, formal experiments that keep me amused. So.
Sure. Now, you mentioned the Dartmouth Comic Arts Festival. I just want to get your take on it. What is it about that event that keeps bringing you back?
I love the atmosphere. It's got this really kind of ingenious structure. And Cal Johnston, who owns Strange Adventures, one of the local comic shops, mm-hmm. I've known him basically since he opened the original shop in Fredericton. I happened to be living there at the time. It's been, you know, really great to see how he's built this community, especially here in Halifax, of you know, artists and fans, and you know, it's all very, just the atmosphere is just very positive, and he usually manages to get some guests in from Toronto or New England, or you know, people who will kind of draw a bit of a crowd.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, Ryan North was one of the guests a couple of years ago, I think, and Michael Cho, and I believe Jay Torres, one of my contemporaries from the 90s, is a guest this year.
Yep.
So yeah, it's fun. It's a very casual event, but because of where it is, it's at Alderney Landing in Dartmouth, which is one of the ferry terminals.
Right.
So you basically have people coming off the ferry every half hour and walking through your show and being like, what is this? And sometimes they have no idea what's going on, and sometimes, you know, they're used to it. Yeah, it's just a really fun, kind of laid-back, kind of small-scale version of TCAF.
That's cool. This year, I don't know if you've been following, but Ed Brisson made the big trek. He's moved his family from the West Coast to the East Coast. So
I saw that. He was here doing a signing at Strange Adventures maybe a month ago, and I didn't get a chance to go see him.
Yeah, he might be at TCAF.
Cool. I do follow him on Instagram, I think, and I saw that he was like moving to, they were like passing through Moncton, and I was like, oh, that's weird.
Now I said,
so that's, is he moving here to Halifax?
He's moving the whole family out there.
Yeah.
That'll be interesting. I mean, it's always a great event. It brings in a variety of different people, from professionals to amateurs, and I think, as you said, it gives people a chance to, even if they're coming to the event or they just happen upon it, a chance to see all types of Canadian creators at work. I think that's a great opportunity.
For sure. Yeah, for sure. Like literally every year, I think I've done that show something like 4 out of 7 years that they've done it.
Cool.
And every year that they've done it, I'll meet people who are like, I had no idea we had so many talented cartoonists in here in Halifax.
There you go.
I'm like, well, I mean, you could throw a rock and hit one.
Sure. That's a good thing. There you go. So,
yeah.
I was going to ask you, where can people find out more about your work and find out more about you? Where would you send them?
Probably my website, although I don't keep it as up-to-date as I should. I did update it just recently because I knew I should for DCAF. And it's at the very, very audio-friendly URL of potsrebie.com.
Okay.
P-O-T-Z-R-E-B-I-E.
Very good. Okay.
Which is an old Mad Magazine joke.
Oh, that's right. That's where I saw that. Okay. I'll have to reference that.
That should be on my tombstone. That's where I saw that. I guess the only other thing that I would want people to take away from meeting me, because this is something that I do fairly often. I get asked fairly often to like lead little groups, you know, teaching kids or teens how to make comics. And so I've actually developed materials along these lines, and I have a Tumblr where I just basically throw links to you know, people that want to learn how to do better at figure drawing, or people who want to do better at storyboarding or that kind of thing. It's all just tips that I try to keep more or less organized by meta tags and stuff. But yeah, I have a kind of a real strong side interest in comics education, I guess just encouraging younger artists to not make the same mistakes that I did as a young artist, and to just be confident and go out and get your stuff out there and get it seen. So
cool.
That's one of the reasons why I want to reach out to you, because, you know, I have to take my own medicine, and if I'm gonna tell younger artists to be relentless self-promoters, mm-hmm. I should make a bit of an effort myself too. So
that's good advice. Well, thank you again, Scott. Really appreciate your time, and hopefully we'll run into each other sometime in the near future.
Yeah, thanks very much, Joe.
Thanks to Scott for chatting with me. You can discover more about Scott on Twitter at Scott Marshall. That's with two T's and two L's. And online at PotsRebbe.com, and that's PotsRebbe.com. And thanks to you for listening to the True North Country Comics podcast. I invite you to subscribe, like, and comment on the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at True North Comics, on Facebook at Facebook.com/TrueNorthCountryComics, and on Instagram at Instagram.com/TrueNorthCountryComics. And please send your feedback to info@TrueNorthCountryComics.com. Thanks again for listening, and come back soon for another episode. Bye for now. True North Country Comics podcast is copyright True North Country Comics, copyright 2018.